your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. MyLowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Wine Bar for sponsoring this episode of Skelton Brothers. Second & Main is a coffee shop located in downtown Niles. They offer delicious beverages like lattes, coffees, cappuccinos, and more. When you're feeling adventurous, try their super tasty iced chocolate-covered strawberry latte. Or if you are not a huge coffee fan, they also offer cold-pressed juices and refreshers from raspberry to blueberry lemonade. They are bound to have something suited for your taste. If you're hungry, they offer several toasts with a variety of toppings and also soup and panini combos. It's the perfect spot if you want to sit and relax and enjoy a quiet atmosphere. And Second & Main has a great deal just for our listeners. If you head to Second & Main during the month of March and mention Underestimated, you can get 10% off your order. Head to Second & Main and get 10% off when you mention Underestimated.
Today's episode is also sponsored in part by Barron Lakeside Bar & Grill. They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves. We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
Because they haven't done all the investigating that they could do. Yeah. I feel they could, because they could do more. They definitely could do more.
That's part of what's because so unfair is the fact that some people got investigated, some people
yeah.
didn't.
Yeah, I don't yeah.
have to say. Myron had a bigger part to do in Janice's case.
Yeah. And then maybe that
no one has any answers. There should be answers by now.
I know, the police department doesn't have anything.
It's the bartender's talking about how Myron said that he's happy that the spotlight was on Jared.
Maybe it's kind of crazy.
What you just heard is a real classroom in a real school, full of students that are eager to unravel all sorts of mysteries. Cases of robbery, murder, and of course, missing persons have all found allies in our investigative journalism course. We're high school students, investigating real crimes all over our state and hoping to make a difference in the world, led by our teacher and true crime podcaster, Bob Ruff. Hello there, my name is Gracie, and I'm one of those students, obviously. Together with my peers, we've dedicated tons of time and care to this investigative work, and the fact that you're hearing our voices right now is proof of our efforts. It makes all the blood, sweat, and tears worth it. So, so many tears, especially on my part. With that being said, here are the other members.
Hey, I'm Olivia.
Hello, I'm Madison.
Hi, I'm Haley.
Hi, I'm Chloe.
And I'm Asia.
Throughout the course of the year, we've learned how to conduct interviews, submit FOIAs, write scripts, record audio, and so much more. Each individual lesson learned contributed to this final project. But that's kind of starting at the end, isn't it? Let's go all the way back to the beginning, where most stories should start. It was a beautiful August day with a slight breeze and chirping birds, and I was absolutely dreading my six-hour class. Our first task for the class was finding cases that we'd like to investigate for the foreseeable future. And the wrongful conviction cases I had been pursuing for the past few days came up dry. I was all out of sorts with myself until I stumbled upon the case of Paige Winkowski. A substitute teacher who went missing out of Okemos in East Lansing. I was drawn in by the mysterious circumstances surrounding her disappearance. Her car was found running on the side of the highway, with her shoes and purse left inside. As her case progressed, we discovered two other cases that happened around the same time and area, cases that were in need of attention. That's our goal with this podcast, to draw attention to these victims, breathe new life into these discussions, and make sure that these tragedies are not forgotten. Now, let's go back to the day of Paige's vanishing. May 24th, 1990. It was the Friday before the long Memorial Day weekend, with plenty of celebrations to look forward to, and even her fiancé's softball game later that evening.
Paige was driving to the Detroit Metropolitan Airport to drop off her mother, Artis, who was heading to Georgia to visit and spend time with her two daughters. Artis later said that there was nothing strange about Paige's behavior and that she was clearly excited for the before-mentioned softball game. Unfortunately, that would be the last time she ever saw her daughter.
After saying goodbye at the airport, Paige took a short 20-minute drive to meet a friend at Griffin Park in Canton Township. While the children ran around and played, the two adults had a perfectly normal conversation, likely full of congratulations about the engagement and well wishes for the future. However, Paige still had plans for later, so she gave a short farewell and headed on her way once again. Maybe if she had stayed just a little longer or gone home with her friend, she would have been safe, but there was no way of just knowing that. The friend said that Paige was acting normal and that they didn't expect anything to happen to her. Now, before returning to the freeway, Paige stopped at a convenience store to buy a beer. You may expect her to hold on to it until getting home or till she got to the softball game, but instead, she poured it into a leftover cup from a fast food place and that went into her cup holder. If Paige was drinking and driving, it would affect her perception, vision, concentration, reaction time, and cause her drowsiness. So you can see how that could have been something that would have thrown her off that night.
The next place Paige stopped was a rest area. There was nothing strange about it. It was the kind you frequently see on interstates. After Paige's disappearance was made public, a witness came forward to place her at the rest stop at around 2:50 p.m. She reported that Paige was speaking to a man at the rest stop and gave a description of this man to law enforcement. And if you're wondering why she didn't come forward before news of the disappearance came out, it's because, yet again, nothing seemed off with Paige. Neither party seemed to be upset or in distress, so the woman thought nothing of it. To her credit, nothing happened to Paige at the rest stop. She got back on Highway I-96 to continue her trip, but unfortunately, she never made it home.
After this, Paige pulls over on the side of I-96. The car lights were still on and the engine was still idling as if she'd only stepped away for a second. Her purse was inside untouched and there were no immediate signs of struggle in or around the vehicle. The eerie scene baffled investigators even though it wasn't processed as a crime scene till after 6 p.m. after the vehicle had already been towed. It was as if Paige had disappeared from thin air and never to be seen again.
Steve, her fiancé, had noticed her absence after a softball game, so rather than heading home, he headed to her mother's house. He had a key, so of course he let himself in, where he was met with a busy answering machine. Instead of hearing news from Paige, the recorded messages were from the Livingston County Sheriff, calling to let Artis know that her car had been found on the side of the highway. It was then that Steve knew something was terribly wrong and drove himself to the sheriff's office to report Paige as a missing person.
The scene was then processed as a crime scene. The police launched a massive search effort, searching the area for any and all signs of Paige. Despite their efforts, though, there was no sign of her. Investigators and police believe that she may have been abducted, and there were reports of witnesses seeing a man, sometimes two, talking with Paige.
It is unclear whether this interaction was friendly, tense, or suspicious, but it would soon become one of the last few sightings of her. Some witnesses also said that she may have had car issues or she may have pulled over to assist someone.
Another thing said is that a burgundy minivan had been pulled over behind Paige, and some of the witnesses said they saw her being badged by a man. Others described the man or men they saw talking with her, but there are conflicting descriptions of his race. In some reports, he's African-American. In others, he looks to be Hispanic. Despite some inconsistencies, multiple crime sketches were made. This information leads to more questions than answers. Was this an innocent interaction or something more sinister?
Over the years, detectives have received numerous other clues. These include anonymous tips, maps, and so on. However, none so far have led to any DNA evidence. Detectives say although there are many leads and clues, all have been chased and pursued. Not so much as a fingerprint has been found.
The lack of physical evidence, no fingerprints, no DNA, no other signs or details meant that there was nothing to go off of. Detectives explored many leads, including an anonymous letter with a map that took them to a property north of Fowlerville, where two unsuccessful digs were performed years apart.
So, to this day, it remains one of Michigan's longest-running unsolved cold cases. No activity or contact has been made by Paige, meaning the abduction likely ended in her death. The police have since ruled her death a homicide, even though a body has never been found.
Paige was a 30-year-old substitute school teacher with an ordinary life. She lived peacefully with her fiancé, Steve Deborah Vander, in a small neighborhood in the city of Okemos.
Paige would be 60 years old today if she were here right now. She had strawberry blonde hair and bright blue eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was going to school to get a degree in early childhood development. She was a hardworking and fun-loving individual, often sharing drinks with her friends.
Both her parents have passed since her disappearance. Paige's father, Carl Ankoski, served as a military policeman and later served as a police officer for the Michigan State Police Service. He passed away 4 years after Paige went missing from what seems to be health problems. Her mother, Artis Rinkowski, had become a board member of Missing in Michigan after she disappeared and advocated for missing people in Michigan, and unfortunately, she had passed away in an automobile incident in 2017.
Despite her parents having passed away at this point, they live on through her three sisters, who are longing for answers. Both Tammy and Michelle have said that they don't believe Paige is still alive. Tammy believes that someone ran her off the road with probable malicious intent, while Michelle believes that someone knows something, and this case could be solved if someone with information just stepped forward.
What do you think it would take for Paige to be found?
I don't know. I don't know that she's ever going to be recovered at this point. And that's frustrating and disheartening and disappointing. But I don't know that, you know, I think someone would have to confess and be able to lead law enforcement to the location where she was concealed.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
We needed some help getting to the small details of these cases, so Mr. Ruff invited former FBI profiler Jim Clementi to teach about victimology. Now, if you're a true crime junkie, you might be familiar with victimology, but for those who aren't...
Victimology is the study of the victim. Everything you could possibly know about the victim. This is incredibly important. It is the foundation of how we build the profile, and in some cases, it is all the information that we have. Their social media, their relationships, their family, their friends, their education, their work, anything, their experiences, their security awareness, their athleticism, any of these details their personalities, all those things are going to be incredibly important for the victimology.
Mr. Ruff then tasked us with making a victimology report for Paige, where we examine the crime from a profiler's point of view.
Risk levels. We look at the risk level of the offender and of the victim. Victims who are in the privacy of their own home and security of their own home are very low-risk victims. They're engaged in activities that are very safe. Whereas people who are out on the road, whether they're hitchhiking or sex workers or drug addicts that are outside and exposed to the criminal element, they're living a higher-risk lifestyle.
As we established before, Paige was a normal woman who lived a normal life. The area she lived in was free from violent crimes. She had a low-risk job as a teacher. She wasn't conflicting with the people in her life, and she didn't do any illegal drugs. But she was still an imperfect victim. Now, I want to specify, this is not judging or victim blaming. These are just aspects of the case that we have to consider when investigating a crime like this. Paige exhibited only two substantial risk factors, drinking and driving, and breaking her routine. We have no way of knowing how intoxicated she was, but her decision-making skills may have been impaired by the alcohol. Even the most cautious can make a mistake. That's exactly what happened that day. For someone whose life was so structured and typical, being outside her routine would make her more vulnerable, because when you are used to the same schedule, same time, same surroundings, you will notice when something is out of place. When everything is new and different, you won't notice these inconsistencies.
Interestingly, we have more unknown factors than we do known factors for Paige's case. With the crime occurring so long ago, we have no way of investigating the questions we've been left with. Because people have been looking for answers for nearly 30 years, we've had more than our fair share of theories to investigate, most of which focus on one mystery. Why did Paige pull off the road? Was it by choice or was it something darker? One popular idea suggests that someone faked an accident by rear-ending her at slow speeds to get her to pull over. She would then get out of the car to check the damage and exchange insurance information, giving the abductor the chance to take her.
While that is a credible theory, the facts just don't support it. Artis assured police that there was no new damage to the vehicle, certainly nothing indicative of a car accident. Even if they didn't hit her vehicle hard enough to do any visible damage, or Artis is somehow misremembering, Paige would have no reason to leave her purse and shoes in the car. You see, the shoulder of I-96 where Paige pulled off was lined with gravel, which you usually wouldn't walk on barefoot.
Another common theory is car trouble. It's possible that someone followed her to the rest stop where they somehow sabotaged her vehicle in some way, but she could still drive it around enough to get down the road.
This theory encounters the same problems as the last one. There was no new damage, and there was no reason for her to leave her shoes in the car. This theory makes even less sense when you consider that when law enforcement found her vehicle, it was still running.
The third theory is kind of from her family. They said she'd pull over for someone she knew, so someone like a family member or an authority figure. This one can't be explained away as easily. This one could be true. Maybe she saw a friend and they told her to pull over, and so she did. And they talked to her, then the friend took her.
I don't believe this one could be true. This one also goes along with why would she leave her shoes disagreement. If she saw her friend and pulled over for them, that probably would have prompted her to get out of the car, in which case, once again, I feel like she would put her shoes on for that. She was only about 100 yards away from the Fowlerville exit. Why would she just pull over on the highway instead of the exit?
In 2002, investigators spoke to a man who was incarcerated regarding her case. There are whispers of him and some associates being involved in her disappearance. One of those associates would have only been 17 at the time. Hypothetically, these men would have been traveling along I-96 to deliver illicit drugs when they saw Paige and decided to abduct her.
What can you tell me about the man in prison that police interviewed about Paige?
He's been in prison for, I want to say, drug offenses. I don't know a ton about him. I know that police have gone and interviewed him, but I don't know that they have anything other than a hunch connecting him to her disappearance. I believe he is a minority. And if you look at the area out by Fowlerville where she disappeared, it historically is not welcoming to minorities. So kidnapping a white woman off the side of the freeway as a minority in that area was incredibly risky, or would be incredibly risky. So they must have good reason to be looking at him, but I am not aware of what that good reason may be.
Nothing came from this line of investigation, and we still don't know for sure if these men had anything to do with her disappearance.
Another theory has to do with someone else, actually. Bill Lambier.
Bill Laimbeer was a famous football player who was married to a woman named Chris Laimbeer. Chris and Paige share a striking resemblance, which is why some people think Paige got kidnapped for ransom, the people who did it thinking she was Chris Laimbeer.
The only issue I see with this is the fact that there was no ransom, no contact whatsoever, as there often is with criminals that have that motive. Another thing is, why would Chris Laimbeer be driving an Oldsmobile? If this were famous football player's wife, she would have a nicer car than that. Surely a celebrity stalker type of person would know the car the target is driving.
There's the theory that she ran away to leave her life behind. While it is appealing to think that Paige is somewhere else, safe and alive, there's little evidence to support it. Why would she start driving back home from Detroit, where she was only an hour from the state line? Even if she did have some other plan, there wasn't anything for her to run away from. Her life wasn't perfect, sure, but she was happy.
Now there's an obvious theory that we haven't covered yet. The first thing everyone jumps on, the husband, or in this case, the fiancé, did it. Some sources say Paige and Steve were not on the best of terms, but Steve had been questioned and cleared time and time again after Paige's disappearance.
The final theory, and the one I believe the most credible, revolves around law enforcement. We have eyewitness accounts of a man approaching Paige's vehicle with an outstretched arm and his palm facing forward, as if he were showing her something, maybe, I don't know, a badge, and motioning her to stop. This report seems even more reliable when you consider that it came from an off-duty member of law enforcement. If you remember, Paige's father, Carl, served as a police officer when she was growing up. This aspect of her upbringing instilled in her respect for authority, which leads me to believe that she would have pulled over for an officer of the law.
I think someone badged Paige and got her to pull over. They flashed a badge at her, and being the daughter of a former cop, she was a good girl. She pulled over, and they got her out of her vehicle. Now, was it the group of minorities in a burgundy minivan, or was it a disgraced state trooper who, this rumored state trooper that lost his job for using his badge to get people to pull over? I think that's the question. I will say, and I think I've told you this before, if you told me that a UFO came and sucked Paige out of her car, I'd believe you, because there's really nothing that fits. So if you told me there was a supernatural explanation for her disappearance, I'd be like, well, all right, okay.
What's more, there were rumors of a man imitating a police officer in the area at the time of Paige's vanishing. We don't know if he was ever caught or if he committed any crimes in relation to his false identity, but it certainly reinforces the possibility. Even so, this is not a perfect theory. Why would a police officer be driving the burgundy minivan that other witnesses saw? How would Paige know to pull over for a vehicle that wasn't police issue? Why did she leave her belongings in the car, and why was the car still running? 3 decades later, and there are still so many more mysteries left unsolved in this unique case.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Interesting thing, like the sticking point for Paige's case, is the very few clues we were left with. You hear they vanished without a trace in so many cases, but with her, you can actually tell that she kind of just up and disappeared.
Yeah, especially because there's like no evidence or like nothing leading to where she would be.
The police sort of messed that one up because her car was towed at first. They had no clue she was missing. They just towed her car from the side of the highway.
I feel like you would assume that,
oh, somebody's car is abandoned here. Maybe we should investigate it before, you know, well, we
especially
decide.
Especially if something was left, like a purse and shoes. If the car was running, her purse and her shoes were in there and the police were just like, eh.
I mean, the only reason I would think her walking barefoot or like leaving her shoes in the car is if she had another pair of shoes with her, maybe. But like, I don't think that's really likely.
Plus, that's all conjecture. Like, we don't have any evidence of that.
Yeah, there's no, like, also, I feel like her mother would have brought that up at some point or, like, would have told the police or something. Been like, oh, she had another pair of shoes, especially because if she drove her mother to the airport.
Some people said that Paige might have just been driving with her shoes off because those were sort of, like, fancy flats, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And women of her stature will often drive just.
But yeah, no, so she could have just like left without her shoes and then. But wait, what would that have like meant? Like, did she leave for why?
If it was me, the only way I would be leaving my car without my shoes on, because I never leave anywhere without my shoes on, is if somebody were like to drag me out of my car.
You got to be like in a panic or something.
Yeah. Need to be like in a panic or. Somebody would have to physically pull me out of my car in order to, like, get me to not wear my shoes.
Some of the eyewitness reports said that a man had grabbed her by the shoulder. So I definitely don't think Paige got very far from the highway. Mm-hmm. I think we can be pretty sure that she was taken from there and just never seen again.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like we said, she was just so close to an exit. If she were safe or she had gone somewhere of her own volition, why not pull off that exit?
Okay. So going back to the one theory about the police officer, you know, that there was rumors of like a police officer going around and badging people and then.
It might have been someone imitating a police officer.
Yeah. Like
that was a long time ago.
Quote unquote police officer. But like that one honestly seems the most true. Out of all of them, that one seems at least the most plausible.
The only issue is with that theory and every other theory we have in this case, there's always something that goes unanswered, something that doesn't make sense, whether it's with the actual physical evidence we have or with eyewitness reports, which are notoriously unreliable, but that's really all we have to go on here.
That's all that we really have is the eyewitness reports, unfortunately, and then the car that got towed.
What makes like witnesses work a lot of times when people are put like not necessarily under the pressure, but like they're being interrogated, they start to like if they don't completely remember, they remember wrong, which could like lead to someone else. Like if they drew like the sketches, if they drew it out wrong, you're looking for the wrong person and then nothing's going to get solved.
Everyone thinks that eyewitnesses are so trustworthy because they think that your memory is just pictures. Like you have this completely factual remembrance of an incident, but that's totally not true at all.
Unless you have an eidetic memory, I don't trust you.
Let's not discredit those eyewitnesses, though, because since that is all the evidence that we have that is really important to us and important to Paige's case, it's just important to keep all of our avenues open, even if some of the evidence suggests that maybe that isn't true.
I remember going into this thinking that it was going to be Steve. Bander. I thought it was him. Do you remember that? When I kept being like, it was him. It was the fiance. It was obviously him. And then as we got more into it, I was like, okay, it wasn't him.
I never really thought it was him simply because a lot of people are always like, oh, it's like the fiance or it's the boyfriend that did it. But the fact that he's been cleared so many times, they obviously must have had reasons to clear him. Like, they wouldn't have cleared him if they didn't have reason to.
Well, that's part of the reason why I thought it was him, because I was like, when we first started and I hadn't really looked into it that much, I was like, typically in my head, I'm like, sometimes it's the boyfriend, the husband, the fiance, whatever. And most of the time it's not.
Going back to like the police sketches, the fact that most of them were drawn as black men and then there's like one white man in there, it's weird how different the police sketches are.
That happens with a lot. Mm-hmm. Like people trying to remember them and they're like,
yeah,
like immediately, you know, if you don't remember and you're trying to like help someone, you're like, oh, I think it was this. And then people go off that and then it's not.
I mean,
even if it's like partially accurate, it might not always be the answer that they needed to find.
Interestingly, all of the theories that we have sort of bounce between accidental and premeditated. And it sort of goes to show that we don't know what we have here. We just quite simply don't have enough.
One of the things I find interesting is her sister, Michelle, hired a sidekick to go to where she went missing and like do a reading on it. And what she said something like completely different from the eyewitnesses. She had said that it was a larger white man with a beard in a pickup truck, and he had forced her into his car, which obviously, you know, the eyewitnesses were different. They were saying it was two men in a van and, you know, they were black men or they were. I found it really interesting that hers was completely different. And obviously, when you're looking for answers, you know, you want to believe things. And I don't know them personally. I don't know if they believed it or not, but they were, you know, happy that they got some sort of answers.
It really goes to show how desperate the family was, that they were trying everything they could, trying to get some form of closure.
Paige wasn't the only one who has gone missing on that road. And it's crazy to me that they completely set this aside. Like, I feel like this road is like a road where people just go missing.
A lot of the cases of people going missing happen in short spans of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the most was about 2-3 years maybe from when we were researching Paige to the some of the other people that we found on there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the other people we saw on there, Connie,
mm-hmm.
same road, mm-hmm. still missing. It's been 30 years, over 30 years. I think
they went missing like a week apart?
Or was yeah, it? 2 weeks apart.
2 weeks apart.
Yeah. And that's like, thinking about like just in general the time frame, that's like horrifying. Some of the girls that went missing on there were found, you know, were mm-hmm. okay, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But it's just like they never caught anyone that mm-hmm. I know of.
The only other question I want to ask is, where would someone have taken Paige? What were they going to do to her? What became of her? Even if we can't figure out who did this horrible thing, I want to be able to find Paige to bring the family at least that answer, to bring her home.
I think that's like the scariest part is the fact that her body has never been found and nothing, like no trace of her has been found since.
Especially because it was so long ago, she probably would not be recognizable aside from like teeth.
She actually had some surgical scars, and I think she had her left knee entirely replaced.
Okay,
so there's definitely
some other evidence that could
specific things that we would find in remains. Mm-hmm. And people have tried matching up different Jane Does to Paige's disappearance, but there's nothing that really dead on drives it home like that, like the surgical scarring or her knee or anything like that. If you know anything about what happened to Paige Renkoski, or if you've heard any whispers about her case, don't let it fade into silence. You've already lent us your ears, and now I'm asking you to lend us your resources as well. You can contact the detectives in charge of her case by calling 517-540-7880. Or email us at underestimatedtips@gmail.com. Voiceless was researched, written, and produced by Gracie, Madison, Haley, Olivia, Asia, and Chloe. Intro music by Haley, all other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Olivia and Madison. The Underestimated Podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community School's Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping to fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.